With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
As many of our listeners will be aware, Liz Gunn appeared in Court Manukau in Auckland last week. And this relates to the, I guess it was a confrontation, as it turned out, at the Auckland International Airport. Liz Gunn and a cameraman there to record the arrival of family members from Tokelau. And many of you will know that story as well. So what went on? What happened subsequently, and we'll get to the court appearance that I mentioned last week. And Sue Gray, lawyer, and, well, you probably don't need too much of an introduction, Sue. I'm picking now with our audience. But you're here to talk about this case, which you became involved in pretty soon after the incident. Am I correct?
Yeah, I haven't been appearing for Liz or anything like that, but within hours of the incident, I talked to Liz and I offered to help her try and get the CCTV footage from Auckland International Airport, because they advertise on their webpage that they have, I think, 1,000 cameras around the airport, and they can track every move you make from the moment you arrive in the airport to the moment you leave. So we thought, well, this is one great way to get to the bottom of what actually did happen. Let's get the CCTV footage. Let's have a look. But no, within a few days, I got a reply back from Russell McVeigh, who are a big firm of lawyers in Auckland, declining my request to the Auckland International Airport, saying it would breach confidentiality, I think they said, privacy of people at the airport if they released the footage.
Though processing can be done on footage to blur out individuals who no one wants to identify. So, yeah, do we buy that?
Yeah, well, what's the reason of getting the footage if not to deal with disputes over this type of thing? I mean, it just never made any sense to me at all. Eventually, they came up with one camera, but it seemed really odd the way they described it in their marketing, that they have so many cameras and the best they could come up with was one sort of long-distance camera that didn't really manage to catch the critical aspects.
Well, that's a tell, isn't it, can I say? Okay, so just remind us exactly of what happened again. Now, many will be aware or will remember that there was something. She was there to record members, family members arriving from Tokelau. Now, these family members, I think, have been holed up for quite some period of time because they refused vaccination. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. They were, I think it was 18 months that they were basically detained within their homes because they didn't agree to get vaccinated. And it seemed that the island of Tokelau was being run by Jacinda's father at that stage, or he certainly had a senior role in the island. And so it was a very, very harsh regime over there, especially since I think Tokelau is like 24 hours by boat from Samoa and would have to be one of the least at-risk places of getting COVID, certainly suddenly getting COVID. So this poor family, they made a lot of friends in New Zealand. Quite a few of us talked to them over that time. And eventually they decided to move to New Zealand, and people in Auckland were really excited. They went to the airport to meet them. Liz was there with her friend who's got great camera equipment, hoping to get some really good footage of their arrival, only to be greeted by an airport security guard who basically accused Liz of commercially using the camera without permission from the airport.
There seems to be something about the look of that camera that a lot is riding on, because you can bet that there are people, thousands of people every day holding up iPhones, which, by the way, are better cameras than the ones I used to work with when I was making films only 10 years ago. Okay. So there was something about the look of that camera that set them off, right?
That's right. And when you listen to the transcript, the security guard was clearly concerned because it looked like a commercial camera. And Liz is repeatedly saying, but it wasn't being used for commercial purposes. They're my friends who are coming. We just want good footage. We're not doing this for money. We're doing it because it's important to do it. And so the Auckland Airport were relying on the fact that they have some kind of rules that you know, yes, people can use their cameras, but no, you can't use your camera. You can't use commercial cameras without permission, which is pretty normal kind of a rule. But they've never seemed to try and block people from just taking photos of family and friends.
Well, they'd love to have people having selfies and footage from there. And I think they've even used some on their social media over the time, let's say. You know, like, this is what it's like when people come back home to Auckland, beautiful airport, and isn't it wonderful, you know?
Exactly, exactly. And we always said on the news with, you know, the All Blacks coming back or whoever. I mean, there's no absolute ban, of course, of recording at the airport.
Okay. So they were there strictly to film the arrival of this family in kind of a personal way, more there was, like you say, no commercial element to it. Now, there was a physical interaction between what the security guard and Liz.
Yes. And by all accounts, it was a minor touching. I think Liz's explanation that she's a very sort of gesticulating kind of a person, and she very, very briefly touched the security guard on her arm. You can't really see from the footage that I've seen, but you can see that nothing happened for very long because the whole thing was over incredibly quickly, and there's no suggestion of any force or anything like that, which is normally required for assault. I mean, you know, you can technically say somebody assaults you if they touch you, but if you think back, for example, at Wellington at the protest where the police came storming down the street and just shoved everybody out of the way, that was way more assault-like behaviour than anything that happened at the airport that day, at least between Liz and the security guard.
And she's a 64-year-old woman, right? Am I correct there?
Yeah, hardly, I don't
you know
her age,
the Rock, Dwayne Johnson coming at you.
And she's little. She's not a tall person. She's a small, slim woman.
So obviously generated more interaction, this time with the police.
And yeah, so there was a bit of discussion between Liz and the security guard, and then the security guard said, I need to leave now. And within, well, it's hard to tell, but I understand a few minutes, the police arrived, and basically they, well, certainly what I've seen on the footage, the police basically just assaulted Liz almost instantly. So they charged her with trespass, but the trespass charges were thrown out in the court, as they would have to be. And we've seen quite a lot about, again, the Wellington protests with a lot of trespass charges being thrown out, because it's not good enough for just someone to say, you're trespassed, and arrest them. They actually have to go through a process. They have to warn them. They have to give them time to leave. In Liz's case, it all happened very quickly, but she was asking questions saying, you know, well, why are you trespassing me at the airport? What have I done wrong? And while she was asking the question and before they answered the question, she was literally assaulted and thrown to the ground by the police officer, or that's certainly what it looked like on the footage that I've seen, and then dragged out of the building, as was the cameraman, shoved out of the building and arrested and charged. It just all seemed very extraordinary.
How much thinking have you done? I mean, I've thought a bit about it. Why would that sort of reaction occur from a professional law enforcement police person? The trespass thing that you said, and also the way of handling that situation.
Yeah, it should never happen. If a police officer, my view, and I've read a lot about the police because I've been really concerned about their conduct in Wellington, and we've just written the book about the Freedom Village, and we've looked at the police conduct a fair bit in that book, and we've looked at their own practices and guidelines, and of course the law. And it should never happen that a police officer loses his cool and assaults somebody, because their job is to keep the police, not to go around creating disruption and harming people. I mean, you have to say, were the police officers badly trained? Were they somehow instructed to do something? I don't understand how that situation could have got escalated the way it did.
Am I right in saying that it was a senior constable?
I don't know that. Okay. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, but you'd expect someone who'd been in the force for even a few years would have enough experience of situations by then to know how to handle it properly.
Absolutely. I mean, that should be basic training. Number one, keep the peace. That's their job. Their job is to keep the peace, not to cause havoc and assault people.
Sounds like that particular person might have been triggered in some way to behave like that. That sounds like triggered behavior.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know, and who knows what was said, but it was all certainly very, very odd, and it's inexplicable. And I would love to see an explanation. I wasn't present in court, so I don't know what explanation he gave, if he gave an explanation at all.
Okay, so it's a judge-only trial. Tell me, or tell us, is that a good call to go judge-only? I mean, how do you make that call?
Yeah, so it depends on how serious the charges are, whether you even have a choice. And I haven't looked at these charges. It may be that because they're relatively minor charges, there was no choice to have a jury. I haven't looked at that answer, but like certainly trespass is a minor charge. I think the others were assault and resisting arrest. But if there was a choice, you would like to think that a judge would have a very good understanding of the expectations on police and what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. So you'd like to think that you would get a fair hearing, whether you have a judge or a jury, really. The other factor is if you believe you've got a good defence, then the judge should be a safer option. If you don't think you've got much of a defence, some people would go for a jury and hope that they just get a bit of sympathy and you know, the jury just doesn't care too much about the law. So, you know, from what I'd seen on the evidence, I would have thought that a judge would have been a good choice because it looked like just on the legal issues alone, the police were always going to struggle to make out the charges. And since they threw out the trespass charge, then it's hard to see how there can be a resisting arrest charge.
Because, well, that all falls to pieces a bit then, doesn't it? Because that was the main thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I would have thought so because it's a resisting arrest. But if it was an unlawful arrest in the first place, you're entitled to resist an unlawful arrest. I mean, if the police officer had no reasonable grounds for believing there was trespass or because he had misunderstood the law, he hadn't followed due process, it's very hard to see how they can make a resisting arrest charge stick, even okay. If there was a resisting before he, yeah. You know.
Yeah. So do you think, because some of us have asked this question before, do you think the judiciary can be relied upon in situations specifically like this where, you know, there's baggage with COVID, isn't there? There's we've seen, I think, some decisions. We could say a kind of taking sides. Do you think there's any worry about that, even with this judge, or do you think it can be, you know, properly assessed and judged without all that baggage?
Look, it should never happen that a judge doesn't ensure natural justice and a fair hearing. I guess judges are human and sometimes they make mistakes and we have an appeal process. But in my view, you shouldn't need an appeal process. You should get a fair hearing the first time around. You know, in my career of, over three decades, my legal career, I've made three complaints about judges. One was a Supreme Court judge who forgot to mention that he owned a racehorse stud with the lawyer for the other party.
Just went out of his mind or her mind, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Even after he was asked some questions. And he actually, we had a long, complicated process, but he actually ended up being forced to resign eventually. I mean, it also turned out that he forgot to mention that he had a guarantee from a bank that was a party in one of his cases and quite a few other things that weren't a good look if they had a full judicial inquiry. So I think the Attorney General at the time who was acting on that, Judith Collins, decided that she was probably better to settle the case with the judge rather than have more public transparency. The second case that I complained about was a Nelson judge who made quite a, I thought, discriminatory comment. He was reported, I wasn't in court, but he was reported in, I think, the Blenheim court saying that a lawyer who said that her client couldn't afford to pay a significant fine because he'd lost his job because of COVID mandates. And the judge made quite an extraordinary reaction, saying, well, how dare you use that as an excuse in my court? And a number of people made a complaint about that judge. And the explanation came back that, well, I've done a lot of research, and how dare anybody not get jabbed, basically. And my fellow judges all agree with me.
Well, this is why I asked that your opinion on that, because we're aware of things like that.
And so that is a part that does concern me, that particular response, because we don't know, of course, how many of his fellow judges he discussed it with and how widespread that was. But if the judges have been led to believe that unvaccinated people are somehow less important or have less rights than other people, which is what the sort of Jacinda Ardern government pushed, then we really do have a problem. It's... One of the problems we also have is, on the one hand, judges do need to be protected against unfair complaints and harassment, and I totally understand that. But on the other hand, there is very little transparency about their conduct and what goes on behind the scenes. They do have guidelines for judicial conduct, which we found when I was dealing with the judge that forgot he owned the racehorse stud with the lawyer for the other side. And these guidelines have been kept secret for many years, and I only found them was just a stroke of luck, because they'd been mentioned by the chief judge of the Marianne Islands, of all things. Okay. And anyway, we eventually got them under the Official Information Act, and they eventually became public, and now the judges themselves rely on the fact that they followed the guidelines. But, you know, the very fact that we had secret guidelines for judicial conduct makes you wonder whether there are proper rules for the transparency of judges.
Yeah. A couple more questions. I think it's fair to say that a number of New Zealanders have a certain impression of Liz. Okay. Now, it takes all sorts, right? So Liz is Liz, and I know that her heart is good. I know that. She's not crazy, actually, and many people make that out. But it seems to be, or make it out that she is, seems to be, though, that people's impression of her, formed through mainly mainstream media coverage, is kind of almost willing to deny her justice, because someone like that deserves it anyway. Does that alarm you? It alarms me.
Yeah, it alarms me a lot. It's a bit like the old days of, you know, we've labelled you a witch, so we're going to hang you. You know, like, that is not what New Zealand and justice should be about. And everybody's entitled to a fair hearing. I mean, that's one of the things you're taught as a lawyer. You can defend a murderer and they may have done it, but they're still entitled to a fair hearing, because it's very easy to prejudge people before you know the evidence and before you know the rights. And we just can't have a system that gives some people a fairer hearing than other people. We have to give everybody a fair hearing. And, you know, I mean, I've had my agreements with Liz and I've had my disagreements with Liz, but it should be completely irrelevant. Everybody's entitled to all of the rights of the justice system.
And how long would it take, do you think, to wrap this case up and get a decision from the judge?
I understand the judge has promised a decision reasonably quickly, and it is concerning because they've been facing those charges, I think it was about March last year, so, you know, probably about 14 months already. They have to turn up at court every couple of months and get scheduled another date.
Costs money, right? Costs money.
And it costs time, and it costs an enormous amount of stress.
Right.
And what they call slap orders overseas, strategic litigation against public participation.
Is that lawfare?
Yes, it is. It's lawfare. It's make charges against your doctors to stop them from speaking out, make charges against lawyers to stop them from speaking out, put people in the court system on bail conditions. Now, we had it with Brian Tamaki and Billy Tikahika. There seems to be a trend of politically inconvenient people and highly regarded people as well, the doctors that have spoken out, are wrapped up in all of these processes And they're spurious. And when it comes to the end of the process, it turns out that, gosh, there wasn't really much to it anyway, but that the inconvenience and the stress and the time and the diversion of energy is just massive in the meantime.
So if she wins her corner, her case, does that mean she can turn it back around on the police?
Potentially. So if she wins, that's the end of the criminal charges, unless the police decide to appeal it, but surely they wouldn't go there. But what then can happen, she could make civil, well, she could potentially do a private prosecution against the police officer for assaulting her. In New Zealand, you can take private prosecutions. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. Or she could take a civil case, or she could make complaints to the Independent Police Complaints Authority, although we haven't seen too much encouraging response from them through the through certainly the Wellington protest cases. You know, this is a problem that we've got with a lot of things. It's so easy to see things that are wrong, and there are so few places that you can go to get fair treatment and to get these things properly resolved.
It kind of feels like the walls are closing in sometimes on these things. Hopefully not. And what do you think about RCR back on air? Got to ask you that.
Absolutely delighted. It is so fantastic to have some independent, thought-provoking media who listen to the people and just cover it as it is. I'm just so relieved, and I'm so happy for you that so many New Zealanders stepped up and showed that they really do care.
That's cool. Sue Gray, thanks for coming on the program this morning.
Thanks so much, Paul. My pleasure.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.